Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps. I'm really excited to have Brian Kinghorn back again. If you have not listened to episode 353, go back and check it out. He introduces himself. There's a lot of great info on there. But man, we didn't have enough time to really kind of get into the antithesis of what we talked about, which was the psychology of social media. And today we're going to talk about more of the weaponization and the negative uses. So, Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. How are you, Brian?
Fantastic, man. And I'm so looking forward to getting into this because I think this is where, you know, a lot of people got angry when they heard about the Cambridge Analytica thing and that their content was being taken and being used to profile them and send them things in the news. And, you know, there was all this negative emotion about it and you know, this social media content being weaponized. And one of the things that I talked about was that most people don't realize the whole concept of social media is you're getting these free platforms so that they can data mine you. That's what Google does. That's what Facebook does. And any social media out there knows more about you than you think they do. So let's dig into that a little bit. Let's talk about how social media can be used for good, which we did in the last one. But now, how is it being used in the world of fake news and the world of data mining and all this other stuff? What are some of the things that you're seeing?
Well, thank you. This is a great topic. I'm excited to talk about it. Let's start with fake news. That's a big one right now. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about money, fake news is really all about the money, at least for the people who share the fake news. It might be different for the people who then continue to share it over and over again and get maybe duped by it. But there was an interesting article, I believe that NPR did it, that looked at a guy who had started a fake news empire kind of thing. And he did it just to see if it would work. But then he kept doing it because the money was so good. Every time he clicked or someone clicked on one of his stories that he made up and he intentionally made them up to deceive, he would get money from it and made quite a bit of money. And that kind of brings up the whole issue of what is going on with Facebook, what's going on with fake news. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it just boils down to money and how that is affecting us.
Right. And the way that people make money, just so that they understand, is a lot of times it's through like AdSense or banner ads or things like that, that people get paid when anybody visits a page. So there's CPM, there's clicks, but there's also just views and things like that. So that's what they're doing, is they're creating fake news to get people there, and then they get paid every time somebody shows up on a page where an ad has shown up. So
yep. And so it's interesting because you've got all the other stuff that's going on with Russia influencing elections and whatnot. But when it really comes down to it, it is a big money maker, and it doesn't cost a lot of money to do it. And the ads on there, I think it's important. You said this, that you know, we get these free products and there's an expectation that they're going to data mine us. I think so many people don't realize that. I've been on Facebook long enough that I've seen a lot of different iterations of it. And when the timeline first came out, people were really upset. They were threatening that they would leave Facebook because they just didn't like the platform anymore, and they didn't like how they were doing this, and they didn't like it. And guess what? They didn't. They dealt with it. They lived with it. But what they didn't understand, and what people still don't understand today, is summed up in a really cool meme. And I'm going to send this meme to you. But it shows a chicken and a pig in a barn. And the chicken or the pig, they're saying to each other, isn't this amazing? We get to live in this barn for free, and all the food is free. This is awesome. And the tagline says, if you get it for free, you are not the consumer, you're the product being sold.
Exactly. And the pig turns into bacon, which I love. Yeah. So, you know, that's so it's a perfect meme for this show.
So the pig turns into bacon, the chicken gives its eggs. And that's why It's why these social media platforms are worth billions of dollars. It's not because people like using them or pay to use them. It's because people like using them and people pay to get their eyeballs or to get their information. They want people looking at their ads and they want people to click on those ads and then buy stuff from them. It's all marketing. And the crazy thing about the Cambridge Analytic thing for me is that, yes, it was on a pretty big scale. And yes, there was some problems with it coming from a research firm and from a university where you had an actual researcher who should have been focusing on his IRB and on ethics a little bit more that it came from. But this is what Facebook was designed for. That's how they make their money, is getting information from us. Now, the fact that it may have influenced an election, the fact that it was used for less than marketing purposes and possibly some nefarious purposes is troubling. And this is why we see Mark Zuckerberg going to have to talk to Congress. But it's nothing new, and I don't think it's something that people should really be surprised about. Because if you put it out there onto a social media site, it's fair game, and that's how they make their money.
Absolutely. And there's a really good book by Joe Trippi, if you've never heard of it. It's called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And he was one of the first people to see how social media was going to affect politics. And he worked on the Howard Dean campaign. And but it brings us to the political side of things, which, you know, people were angry at that. But people are also angry at a lot of things. And people are using social media not only to create fake news, but like whether you're pro or anti-gun, the kids at Parkland High School memes that were put up of the girl ripping the Constitution when it was a target. They're fake actors, all these things. And you get, you know, I'm just going to call it left and right. You know, people on the left get angry at people on the right, and people on the right get angry at people on the left. People have, I mean, it's even happened to my family. My wife and her sister get into political fights. And this happens on Facebook all the time. And I've got friends who are constantly posting, you know, either very far right or very far left stuff that is going to agitate people. They do it on purpose, you know, to get their point across, but also they're doing it with a mindset of trying to piss off the other side. Why do people do that?
Well, there's an interesting couple things that happen here, I think. One is that social media has created what we call filter bubbles or echo chambers, where you can connect with a whole bunch of people who agree with you. And so you think that more people agree with you than actually do. It's really interesting because we see the country is very divided. And yet if you get into certain filter bubbles, people will think it's just the minority who doesn't agree with me, and they're wrong. And really, it's about a 50-50 thing with what we're doing, what we're seeing in politics. It was a very close election. Obviously, there's some great deep divisions in our country, and those are showing up, I think, partly as a result of social media, because we're seeing people come into these platforms, these chat rooms, these groups, and they get into groups of people who are like-minded, which skews their view of the world, thinking that, well, we're right and everybody else is wrong. And they're, it's like the dress, right, that we talked about in our last episode. Is it white or gold, or is it blue and black? And the funny thing is what the people are seeing is wrong for both of them, because the dress is somewhere in between in the actual image. Even though the real dress is blue and black, the actual image is neither blue and black nor white and gold. It's somewhere in between, and our brain is just picking one side or the other. Our brains tend to be pretty dichotomous in that way. We like to think of things in dichotomous ways, that it's one or the other, all or nothing, when life is really a little bit more gray. And I think if you really boil it down to what people really believe, without the talking heads and without the crazy memes, people are a lot more centrist than social media would imply. And the crazy thing is why aren't they acting that way? And that brings to the second point, and that is that when you're on social media, you feel like you're anonymous. Mm-hmm. And this anonymity makes people think that they can do and say things that they would never do in real life. And it just blows my mind when I see guys that I knew from church years ago who are really nice guys, and they post these seriously racist things. And I'm like, where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. How could you post that? And it's really because they feel like they're anonymous online, and they've got this meme that really addresses something they're concerned about, and they often don't think about what the implications are because, oh, it's just online. It's not a big deal. So they feel like they can be much more mean and vindictive and get into these arguments online that they would never get in real life. I actually had an experience in my Cub Scout group. I'm my son's wolf leader in Cub Scouts, and his one of his friends is in it as well, and his dad is an active army officer. And so we'd planned this out, and we were talking about the problems with social media. And I walked up to this guy, and he was in uniform, and I said, "You're stupid." And they're like, "What did you just do?" And I was like, "Now, if I'd done this without planning it in real life," and I said that to a guy who's quite a few inches taller than me, quite brawnier than me, definitely in better shape than me, and wearing a military uniform, what could I expect in real life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get beat up. Mm-hmm. But if I do it online, there's no recourse. And so people feel a lot more comfortable doing that because there's this feeling of anonymity. The funny thing is that nobody's truly anonymous online, except for the people who really, really know how to use the technologies. And they're using anonymity to take advantage of what you think is anonymity and actually taking advantage of a lot of people as a result of that.
Right. And you bring you're kind of blending the two things together. And that is, you know, the fake news and the weaponization and creating divisiveness. And when it comes to marketing, you know, you're marketing to a big crowd. You don't know if they're left or right or happy or sad or whatever. You know, obviously, the more you can target them, and that's what Facebook is all about, is getting all this data so you can target the very specific people. I need left-hand golfers that are less than 5 feet tall, and I can get that with this. And the same thing with Google. It allows you to do this. But one of the things I think that people got angry about is the fact that their data was being used specifically for that, even though they didn't think about the fact that every time they go to Target's website to order toilet paper shows up everywhere on your web browser, you know, which is retargeting pixels. So that whole thing is there, and it's being used all the time. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, how Google is doing kind of the same thing that Facebook is doing, the LinkedIn and Twitter and all these other things. They're using this for good, trying to sell stuff through people. But, you know, some people are obviously hitting emotional buttons with negative news and getting people to act the way that they probably wouldn't, because A, the anonymity, and B, it just hits them in a certain way where they react differently than they would in person, right?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because you've got the Russian bots. There was one particular thing in Texas, and I don't remember the particular thing they were fighting against, but this same Russian bot created a group on one side of the issue and a group on the other side of the issue, and invited people from both sides of the issue to come and fight with each other in a town square in Texas. And it had all been created by the same group, not to care about the issues, but to divide us. I thought that was pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. But power doesn't necessarily mean good. Right. And a very scary thing that can happen. Another thing with the Cambridge Analytica thing that I thought has been particularly sticky is that they said that you gave permission to take all of your friends' data too. So it's one thing if I decide to take a quiz from there, but then to have the 1,000 plus friends of mine on Facebook also get their data taken by consent, supposedly, is a big deal. I think we have these problems with consent, with privacy, and with intentionally misleading people in looking at that. I think it's a interesting, powerful but sometimes not very good thing.
Right. In the world of, you know, online media and the world of credit card statements and the world of everything, you get these books and they're called privacy statements and rules and regulations. And, you know, even if you have to sign it, you know, nobody reads the whole thing. When you click a button saying you accept, nobody reads the whole thing and you have no concept that that's being done. And I think that's where, you know, the anger comes from is, like you said, is that this was done without our knowledge. I mean, I could have never taken a test and my stuff could be utilized that way. And that's kind of, that's the scariest part about this. And we're starting to get into almost an Orwellian way of thinking, that this data can be used for good and it can be used for bad. And it just is, it's mind blowing. But here's the thing. I don't think it's going to change. And like you said in the last episode, people aren't going to jump off Facebook because they're too addicted to it. It's like cocaine and they like having friends. And one of the other things you mentioned too was, you know, getting 500 likes and 1,000 likes and 2,000 fans. And there's a 5,000 fan limit. And it's almost like, you know, people are elated when they get more people to like them because it means they're more popular and they're better. It's like a complete false sense of security. So how is this affecting us outside of the social media world and blending into our daily lives and the way that we communicate with other people?
Well, this is interesting. I just thought of a couple of anecdotes that I have read about. I'm not quite sure where I read them, but one was a girl who these analytics were so good that they figured out she was pregnant before she'd told anybody. And so she's a teenager, pregnant, and her dad is getting stuff in the mail about baby diapers. You're like, how does this happen? Oh, what's going on here, right? And so they know more about us than we even sometimes know about ourselves. There was another where a girl was an added popped up for a gay cruise, and she hadn't even come out to anybody but her best friend. And there it is at work. And Facebook or Google knew that she was gay before she did. Yes, just yesterday, I saw this thing that showed how Facebook has your information and your categories for advertisers. And I will send this to you, but it basically, if you go to your account settings, ads, your information, your categories, it shows these categories. And one of them is U.S. politics. There's a category for that that will tell you whether Facebook thinks you are extremely liberal, slightly liberal, conservative, or very conservative. And so based on your posts, you look at that. I also looked at this, and I have a five-month-old baby. So I show up with the new parents, 0 to 12 months old, parents all, away from hometown, away from family, education and libraries. I'm glad that showed up. It shows my politics, which is a little more extreme than I think it is, but maybe not. It shows which devices I've come from. It shows when my anniversary is coming up, that I am a page admin, that I commute, that I'm, all sorts of things that it's looking at for how to target ads towards me. And these are things that I didn't directly tell Facebook, but Facebook knows about it. There's another one that an article by the page I Effing Love Science.
I love that.
Where you can, how to see and block all the apps tracking you on Facebook. And I went through that. That was crazy because I had so many of these that I didn't realize. I maybe had taken a quiz on it once just to have fun. So what Harry Potter character are you or something like that? Those continue to track you. And then there are ones that I know I have never touched before, but I have gotten requests or people who've sent these requests, here, take this quiz. And I never did. I just deleted it. But those apps are tracking me as well. And so I'll send you the link to that article for your listeners so that they can look at how what's tracking them, and you can actually go through and you can take those off if you're not interested. Now, from a marketing perspective, that might be don't take them off. But still, we have to be careful. Social media is a tool, and even if we're using it for marketing, there are good ways to do it and there's bad ways to do it. And we need to be really careful about that, because I think that Right now, it's as a friend of mine, we were talking about it a couple of years ago at a conference. It's the World Wild West. And in the World Wild West, laws haven't caught up with what is moral and what is right yet, but we see that it will. We see that there's laws now about child pornography where there weren't before, and people who were engaged in child pornography online couldn't be prosecuted because of the ways they were doing it. The laws have caught up. Revenge porn laws have caught up with the perniciousness that is revenge porn, and so now people can be prosecuted for that. And I think we'll see a number of other things where the laws catch up with these behaviors that are antisocial being propagated by organizations and influencers online.
Gotcha. All right. Well, somewhere out there, Brian, one of my friends, one of the podcast listeners, is standing on a ledge about to jump because of all the things that we've talked about. And so in this last question, last segment, give them some hope. Talk them off the ledge. Get them back to the point where they understand that this is just the new reality and that it's going to change, it's going to get better, and things are going to, you know, it's never going to be the same, but it's going to normalize.
Yeah. Well, a couple things there. First, when I talk to my students in this psychology of social media class that I teach, my goal is to scare them to death with the negative stuff, but also show them so many more positive uses of social media than they'd ever thought of. We've got all sorts of things that social media can do well with making connections, with digital altruism, with crowdfunding, with crowdsourcing, connecting with people that you love, sharing good information. YouTube is great for sharing information. When was the last time that you had to fix something and did you go to YouTube first or did you call a mechanic? This is bad for all mechanics out there, but we use YouTube as a tool to learn stuff. I changed my garbage disposal in my house when it rusted out because of a YouTube video. What a powerful thing. Yep. So we've got all this good that can happen on social media and all this bad that can happen on social media. And really, social media is just a tool. It's a tool that's a coin with two sides. And on one side of the coin, you've got the deepest, darkest, most horrible things that can happen on earth, like child pornography and murder for hire that you might find on the dark web. But on the other side of it, you've got the best of humanity. You've got people who are sharing millions of dollars through the Ice Bucket Challenge to help ALS and actual good research and possible breakthroughs as a result of that money. You have an opportunity to connect with family. My parents are in Samoa on a humanitarian mission, and because of social media, we can stay connected with them. And so what I want my students to know, and what I want your listeners to know, is that social media is just a tool. Now, we need to be very, really, really careful that people don't use that tool against us, but we also need to be very careful in how we use the tool. So are we going to use the tool for good, or are we going to use it for ill? And if we can step back, take a look at our use, maybe get over the addictions and stop using it so much, and take a breath, reevaluate ourselves, and decide to use it for good, it will be a powerful source of good in the world. And I know that this is going to happen. Wikipedia is a great example of that. It started out as a really bad resource because anybody could change anything, but because the community wanted it to be a good, valid resource, that's what it's become.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true. And I want to bring up one last point before we finish up. And I had a great interview with the CMO of Evernote. And he talked about, even though it's not considered a social media platform, he talks about the ability for people doing cancer research to basically create notebooks to put all of their notes in so that other people doing cancer research can see this. So there is a lot of good, and I think a lot of it is, you know, one of my favorite sayings is this, is that there's two kinds of people in the world, people that get up and say, good morning, God, and the other people that say, good God, it's morning. And you get to choose your attitude about it, and you can either run away scared like Chicken Little, or you can be somebody that says, you know what, this stuff is happening, and I'm going to focus, I'm going to be as proactive as I can, but I'm going to focus on using it for good. So That is some great advice. And that's really, you know, it's a positive way to kind of end this. So, Brian, this has been fantastic, man. These are have been two episodes. I probably could talk to you for another 4 or 5 hours, but my Starbucks coffee cup is empty. I'm kidding. I'm not drinking Starbucks. But anyways, you brought some incredible bacon knowledge bombs and some great advice and some great insight on the psychology of social media. I cannot thank you enough for that. And if people wanted to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, there's my website, briankinghorn.com. And it's funny because my marketing friend said, hey, it looks like a PhD put this website together. And yes, I did. Mm-hmm. And it fits my purposes. Or my email is brian.kinghorn@gmail.com. If you wanted to get a hold of me and ask me about any of these questions or ideas, it's certainly an interesting topic and I'm happy to talk about it.
Well, Brian, I know you're working on a book, and when that comes out, I'm going to be looking forward to talking to you again, because this is a topic that's ever changing, just like social media. So I really look forward to having you back in the future. And thanks again for your time, your insights, man. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you so much, Brian. I've really appreciated the time spent with you today.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.